session number 30404, Mr. Ted Clements, Real Four. Now, we were talking about the thing. Was there a shortage of ordinary dressings? Because...
No.
I think this has got a bit wrong, this bit in the notes. Anyway.
See, is there something about shortage of ordinary...
It just says there's a shortage of dressings. And I think it's just been misunderstood somewhere.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's a shortage.
Now, anything else you remember about working with the New Zealanders? I mean, you were only attached to them for 3 weeks, it says.
Yes,
here, but 2 or 3 weeks.
Yes, but I was with them. They were very good fellows, great people. And they were fighting, they were getting wounded, they were doing their job. But the big thing is that when they established a field ambulance, the New Zealanders, they put 4 red crosses on canvas pinned to the ground around their dressing station and their field ambulance so that no one would bomb them or bring firearms into that area at all. So what we had to do when we arrived there, We had arms. I had arms. Got a rifle again, and my friend had a Tommy gun. And we got just to defend ourselves, you know, as we were moving about. But we weren't allowed to take them into that area, and it was a big area. It was about 50, must have been 50 meters by 50 meters, where these things were. In order to stop anyone bombing them, you see, would help. But you weren't allowed to bring any arms into that area. So, well, we used to go back, but we used to have to park our truck outside and carry these chaps in. And the other chaps used to come from the field and come and help us too to get them down, from there. And it worked very well with the New Zealanders, I must say. Didn't have such a long time, but I had with them for nearly 3 weeks working with them. And I got to know some of them. They gave me their addresses even, to go and see them in New Zealand. But anyway, that's beside the point. One night, we come back, we're exhausted, we were tired, because we've been going all day long. And parked our vehicle, left our firearms with the vehicle, there's no one around there would touch it, take them, anything like that. And went off in and took all our chaps down, got the others to help, and got there. And then they were making food there somewhere. They were making food for the staff. So we had quite a long way to go back to where we were stationed. And we didn't quite know where we were going at that stage. We had to go and find out where they wanted to send us. But we thought we'd stay there and have some food for the evening. Have a meal there of some sort to get some... whatever. The New Zealanders have some quite nice food, actually. And while we were down there, we'd no sooner got our food, and he gave us Dixies and that. We had our own, but they were in the tribe. I don't know whether they lent us Dixies. But we were overrun by a German force. And they
what type of force? Infantry?
Infantry and machine gunners. And Ricky cars, you know, they call these Ricky cars, they've got a machine gun in the front. They over and they encircled the whole place, and they came down and said, you're captured, to these people, you're captured. And they formed a cordon right round, and, we were stuck there. What did it say about, was it a week I was there?
It's not quite clear on how long.
It was about a week anyway.
Now, what was happening? So, what were you doing in this hospital area, in the ambulance, field ambulance area then, while you were prisoners?
After we were captured. Yes, I see, yes. Okay. We were helping, carrying wounded around, digging slit trenches, because we were now being shelled by our own people. And funnily enough, it was one of our brigades, our first brigade, Danny Pienaar, who was shelling. Because the Germans, what they did is, it was supposed to be a clear area, no firearms and all that, Red Cross. Eh? So they started in the evenings bringing their stuff up through to their front where it was, out there somewhere where the New Zealanders and the British were. And they're bringing all their supplies and stuff up and going through this place, hoping not to be hit, you see, on the way, so you know, to get safe passage through there. And somehow our people cottoned onto it and started shelling them. But of course, a lot of the shells went astray because they were shelling from quite a way away, apparently. And the chaps were hit again, and we were fortunate. Especially, I have no idea how ever, because I've had shells landing right on my slit trench, you know, and burst, and then you wonder what the hell, and then you find you're okay, and it was just, well, it's just chaotic. It's, you know, from a nerve point of view, you're finished.
Were you digging a lot of slit trench? You didn't just dig them for yourself, did you?
No. No, we're digging in for wounded chaps too. Wounded chaps who are lying on stretchers who were just recuperating or needing to be taken back, far back to Cairo and so on in time, but not being able to move, you see. So we had to dig, just kept on digging. All day long we were digging trenches. And the Germans also used it as a depot. They brought in more prisoners that they'd captured, you know, the odd transport people and so on, people like that, and the odd infantry chaps that were caught, and the South Africans. There were some South Africans amongst them. A couple of black South Africans who were drivers and so on, they were there. And
you were treating German wounded as well? Were the German medics there?
Yes, the German medics were there, and they were treating there. They're using the facilities of this hospital, you see. Because, you know, at the later stages in the desert, the Germans were very short of everything.
So they were there. Would the German medics treat the British wounded and vice versa? I mean, or was it...
No, I know that we treated their prisoners, their wounded, but... I haven't told you, but a couple of times earlier on, I picked up Germans, wounded Germans too. That was the early days, you know.
But you wouldn't pick them up.
Stage. Yes, of course. We did, and I think the Germans were pretty good with our people as well. Very good. They were. They helped. Like anything, you know, the first battle where all these chaps were hurt, and the field ambulance, the earlier stage, I mean, they were very good, actually, later on. So I understand, because by that time, Lee and Al-Kabli, we'd ducked, we'd gone. But there we were, stuck in this place, not knowing what was going to happen, not being used, you know, by our people anymore, obviously, because they couldn't come there, the New Zealand, otherwise they'd be captured. So what they were doing, heaven alone knows. And after about, I think it was a week.
It says 10 days, but I mean...
Yeah, 10 days, yeah.
I've just spotted that.
Something like that, 10 days. A Wilson column came up. Now, these long-range desert group British columns that they had in the desert, they were wonderful. They came up with their machine gun units and armored cars and a whole lot of vehicles. And they broke through the cordon and came in there, and a whole lot of us who were still able were fortunately not wounded or anything like that, or even walking wounded, some of them, came with us, and we got onto these trucks. And they evacuated us. It was too amazing. Really, they did a wonderful job.
So there was no fighting around that? I mean, they just came in and
no, there
Germans
was
surrendered?
Yes, they did fight to begin with. They had to break their way through. But they broke through in one place, and then the armored cars moved around, and the Germans kept the Germans off, and we managed to get onto get out of this place and get onto these trucks. And unbelievable, it really was. Unthinkable that it could have happened like that. It was such a surprise.
You must have been incredibly relieved.
Oof, you can say that again.
So what happened then? What was the journey back across the desert like?
Well, that wasn't so bad. I mean, I didn't worry. We looked after nicely, and we had food and so on, and took all our details and so on. Where have you been? What have you done? What have you seen? You know, the whole thing, interrogation. We had to have that liaison officer ask you all these things. And we did the best we could. But we were very, very gratified to think that we'd been saved, you know, for what we'd been through, you know, not even a scratch from a piece of shrapnel or a bullet. Too amazing. He and I, 100% still.
Now, what happened next?
Well, then they took us back to Mesmatru, to our camp in Mesmatru.
Now,
there was still a depot there.
Were you then put back to the fourth motor transport company? Did you leave the third Transvaal Scottish?
Yeah, well, I wasn't connected to them at all. I was still in the 4th MT.
That's right,
you were just attached.
So you went back to the 4th MT company
fourth
depot.
MT, yes.
And what happened then?
Well, in the meantime, they had formed a number of transport units using black drivers. Black men from South Africa had been trained. And I had, I forget how many were, well, we were all promoted to sergeant, you know, and by this time, and I got back to normal. I didn't get sent home and home leave or anything like that.
You were promoted to sergeant after this incident?
After the incident.
And you were put in charge of black driver, black as in South African black.
Yes, South African blacks, yes. And we formed companies. And I can't ever remember the name of the company I was with. They called the Native Military Corps. It's being recorded, sorry. I'll have to try and remember that one, Peter, and let you know. I can't remember what they called
it. So it was a special transport company.
Yes, they came from the NMC, which was the Native Military Corps, which they formed of soldiers, you know, who wanted to join the army, like a lot of people do. Like they joined a lot of blacks joined the Boers during the First World War, even though they'd been badly treated and so on, but that's for the money, for the food, you know. But anyway, these
so
chaps were
like
okay, they were fine.
It's something like Transport Company, Native Military Corps.
Yes, that's right.
And this is from 42 onwards. So you were promoted to sergeant. Now, what were your responsibilities?
Well, we were sent on convoys and delivering stuff everywhere and so on around in Egypt. And then we were transferred over to Palestine. Palestine, we were established in Palestine, and we were carrying goods. All the American, by that time, Al Alamein, by the time it came to Al Alamein, and Al Alamein was beginning to move, we were first carrying our stuff up to Al Alamein and areas like that, taking up ammunition and stuff and all that to Al Alamein, because of really for the big push. And by this time, we were receiving American tanks, guns as good, even superior to the 88 millimeter, and lots of ammunition and stuff, and getting ready for the big push at El Alamein, you know. And then when they started the big push, we were still bringing things up there, but when they started when the Germans retreated after 3 days of terrible fighting, in which South Africans were involved, some of my friends, one of my best friends who died now, he was wounded there in a tank. But we were brought back now, and we were sent to Palestine.
And moved. And what were you doing in Palestine? Just the same job? How long was that
for? We were coming back to Suez and to Cairo and carrying all the equipment that was left over in Egypt at that stage was being transported to the Russian front, the Eastern Front. So we had these convoys going through Palestine, Lebanon, up to the Turkish border. And from the Turkish border, they were picked up, taken through in my understanding, by the Russians. And I was there for, we did it for a long time. 3 months, I think it was, yes, about 3 months that we were there doing that.
How did you get on with the black drivers?
Very well indeed. I always got on well with blacks. You know, I had my father had a friend who had a farm, and they had black people working for them, and when I was a youngster at school, I used to go to the farm and run around with the black kids everywhere. And
so it wasn't a problem for you?
No problem at all.
Were they good drivers?
Good drivers, yes. They had to be taught. Had to be taught, after all. I mean, it's like teaching and experience, but a few had to lose every now and then, but they were fine. They were first class. They did a wonderful job.
So what happens next after Palestine? I think we'll just sketch out, you know.
Yes.
Unless there's any other incidents.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't say there are any other incidents, really. After that, I went to Beirut and all around these places, you know, sort of different places. I went to Palestine, I got a bit of leave now and then. The thing that impressed me very much was, completely civil, was the way that the Israelis had irrigated and prepared everything in their areas, you know. It was wonderful how they growing all sorts of crops and that sort of thing. We went into the Arab areas, there was very little being done at all. You know, where they ever got their food from, what they ate, heaven alone knows. But we had a problem with them because the Arabs and the Israelis at one stage used to try and rob our stuff, you know, rob the trucks and all that sort of thing. We had to have surveillance on them 24 hours a day, you know, even if we stopped on the side of the road, we'd have to. A lot of people have to stay awake and take shifts just to watch so these chaps didn't break in. We had these canvas frames, big metal frames with canvas over, you see. And they used to cut, you know, have a jump on the thing and with a knife cut the canvas and throw the stuff out. Yeah.
So how long were you in the Middle East for then?
I went back,
Were you out there for the rest of the war?
No. I was only there for about 2 or 3 months, that's all.
And okay.
Then I got ex-North leave. But in the meantime...
What's ex-North leave?
Well, that means I went back to South Africa on leave. By that time, our army, our whole army, had gone back to South Africa to train in tanks. To make the 6th Armoured Division, 6th South African Division that went to Italy. But I wasn't involved in that because we got back late, you see. They'd finished their training and they were on their way back to the Middle East at that time. And I had leave and the fact that I'd been away for three and a half years nearly, I got an extra month's leave. And then, for some reason or other, I...
See, that would mean it was a bit later, 3.5 years, because you only joined in 1940. That would be 1943.
Yes, 43.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
I wasn't ever sent back to the front. I was established in training black troops to guard... all the coast of Natal, of Durban, Natal, in case of invasion, because they had sighted submarines nearby and they were scared of an invasion and they had set up gun posts and all that sort of thing. Now, all the time that the blacks were in the desert and so on and away with us, they weren't allowed to have firearms. You can't believe it, but they weren't allowed to have firearms. But now, down there, they didn't actually have the firearms, but they were allowed to use them and be trained in them, using them. We used to take them out to ranges. And what I became was almost like an instructor, you know, with a few other chaps in different battalions. There were three or four battalions of us, but we generally did a good job. They were wonderful.
And what was the unit called? Did it have a name?
No.
No, so it was just...
No, just the coastal defence. That's about all they call it, coastal defence.
So yeah. Did anything happen during that period? That was some 43 to 45, basically.
Yes.
Right. Anything happen? What do you remember of that time? Any stories that just give people an idea of what it was like?
Well, when we come talking about the black chaps, they were very good chaps. They really were marvellous. We got on well with them, and they were keen on their job. They were keen to be soldiers, and they stayed awake. They didn't go to sleep on the job and that sort of thing when we did inspections and everything, and I was very, very impressed, and I just wondered why. Well, I knew why, because of the apartheid business, but they hadn't been made soldiers long before, because they would have been a wonderful help, like so many of the blacks were from East Africa and so on. What was the other thing? Oh! Well, I don't know whether I should tell you the story, but talking about the boxing and the fighting.
Yeah, go on. We've got about 10 minutes.
Yes. Well, we were in Durban, and we used to get leave about once a week on a Friday night or something. You could go out, the other time you'd be on duty and that. And a friend of mine and I, now you mustn't forget, we had what they call the Office of Brandwacht. And the Brandwacht was still a crowd of Afrikaners, a group of Afrikaners, who still hated the British for the Boer War. And even though so many of them had joined up by now, there was still this element of these guys who were around. A friend of mine and I had been out at dinner and something, and we're coming back, and the train used to take us from where, from the main station to wherever the camp was, at about 12 o'clock at night. So we're walking along through the station. It's an old station with a long corridor like this. And this friend of mine and I, we were attacked by three of these, what they called Osava Brandwacht, which is a stupid name, but they were, you know, chaps of this membership who hated the British, you see. So they used to tackle soldiers and people like that. People, anybody to do with the army or the British, they used to unfairly, you know, absolutely terrible. We were attacked by three of these chaps.
On the train?
No, this was as we were walking up to get to the train, through this building. And one fellow had a knuckle duster. And they were big chaps, but my friend, he could use himself. And, you know, when I say he was pretty capable, he was strong. And like me, I was strong too in those days. And he was hit by this knuckle duster. And later on, we found 17 stitches in the side of his face that he had to have right down his neck. Anyway, this chap tried to hit me, and with a bit of luck, well, I say to a certain extent luck, I managed to hit him. By now, there was a commotion. We were shouting and so on, and the police, the military police had heard, and they were coming running down the building to come and see what the hell was happening. And I managed to hit this chap on his jaw, somehow, a left hook, on the floor, out for the count. I couldn't believe it myself. So the police came in, and they said, and the other two chaps ran away. They ran away because they heard the police whistle blowing. See? They ran away. I'm sorry, I must be boring you.
No, carry on. It's
anyway, they came in there, and they said, hey, you know, and now my friend has got this, you know, he's got his coat up like this, hiding his face. The blood is streaming all over him. And he said, what happened then? Yeah, I said, he got hit with a knuckle duster. So, what about this chap here? What happened to him? He said, oh, you know, knocked him out. I don't believe you. Yes. So he said, my friend said, yes, he did it. And so anyway... I took the knuckle duster off this guy's hand, and I've still got it today. But I don't know what to do with it. I must burn it or something. I don't want someone to get hold of it and hit somebody with it. But can you believe it, eh, Peter, that that sort of thing can happen, eh, in your own country, eh? Having a nice evening out, no arms, no, and you get tackled like that.
Now, what about, when were you demobilized? Was it in 45 or 46?
I'm not sure. I couldn't tell you that one.
Now, tell me, when you got back, what was your life like after, I mean, the army? I mean, did it make a big difference to you, or did you just go back to your career? I know you've got an architect's practice, I presume you did, but
yes.
What happened after the war, your career? Just very quickly sketch it out. We've only got a minute or two now.
Well, we were very, very keen, you know, to get back to civilian life. And we were, of course, regretted very, very much how many of our friends had died and been killed and wounded. And I had two or three chaps who were disabled because of the war. Friends of mine played rugby with me. One, he went around the side of a tank one day and stood on a mine and blew his legs up and things like that. And half an arm, you know, one arm. One friend miraculously managed to keep it. But I'm just talking about chaps who were wounded and the chaps who were lost, of course.
These are people you knew.
And that was terrible. We really, and we formed these associations, and we used to meet and talk about it. And they still do, still carry on, those that are left. But I've only got one of my old comrades left. I mean, I must have had, coming back from the war, wounded and others, there must have been about 10 of us. And there's only us, you know.
So you kept in touch with your old comrades?
Yes, of course. Yes.
That was important to you?
Very much so, very much so.
Now, what about resuming your university course and your career? How did that go?
Well, I just sort of slipped into it like that, you know.
You went back to university?
Yes, I went back and I went to university straight away. And I finished my session, finished, and got my qualification. Yeah.
And you had a career. Can you just briefly talk to us, very briefly? You set up as an architect, didn't you?
Yes. Well, I didn't to start off with. To start off with, I worked for someone else, but I didn't like it very much, so then I started on my own. After about 6 or 8 months, I began my own practice. And virtually, I began my own practice because people were asking me to do work for them and so on. I didn't want to go through the big firm and that sort of thing. So, being friends, you know, why don't you start your own business? So I did. And it was a bit of a battle, but I never looked back, you know. Always had work to do, fine, good clients, good friends.
It's still in the family now, the practice?
Yes, it is, yes. It's in the family now, I've got it, yes. And I've got a big practice, actually.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.